good thing you folks have such a fancy place, because you ain't never leaving it.
Hi, I'm Sabrina.
We're sitting in our recliners in our own front yard, and suddenly we're conjured to the mortal realm. What would you call that, Mama?
Rude.
You must be Racine.
And that's Boyd, Racine's husband and Boyd's mother. Mama. That's her given name.
Sabrina wanted us to invite you over so that we could talk about this feud.
And lunch. Didn't somebody say something about lunch?
Hey, I got dressed. They better be feeding us.
Ladies, gentlemen, Peggy Lipton, welcome to episode number 33 of Sabrina's Witch Trials. This is the show where each episode we venture back into the mid-1990s to rewatch, review, and reminisce all about everyone's favorite Friday Night Spellfest, Sabrina, the Teenage Witch. Folks, I'm Alex Aruju, and this episode we're going to talk about a lot of things. Racism, first and foremost. Eating cats will also be mentioned, and just, you know, fun knob humor will also get thrown in there somehow, because we're talking about episode 33 of Sabrina Teenage Witch, Witch Trash, and along on the ride here, this episode of The Witch Trials, I've brought back everyone's apparent favorite guest on Sabrina Teenage Witch's podcast, Sabrina's Witch Trials. I'm fucking this up right as I go along, so I've got to throw it over to her. Chris Aduja is here. Chris, how are you?
I'm good.
That is great to hear.
I don't know why I'm a favorite. You guys need better taste.
Listen, I've told them. I've told the listeners on episodes you're not on.
Pick someone better.
Because I know you don't listen to the ones you're not on. You don't listen to the ones you're on either.
I listen to them when I say them.
Is that really listening?
In stereo.
It's a very
live
2018 argument there, Chris.
Really? Is it?
The point is, I lecture the listeners about picking a better favorite guest. But you know
you
what?
Should.
They say to me, we've got to have Chris.
Do better.
That's true.
When there's an obstacle in your path, like Chris,
yes,
just go around
Chris,
it.
Chris is one hell of an obstacle. How have you been, Chris?
Good.
You're getting ready? You got some big changes in your life going on?
Yeah, I started a new job this week.
Mm-hmm. You're still on the keto diet?
I am.
Which is going very well for you.
I lost almost 50 pounds.
That's awesome. And we've actually had some listeners reach out to you and talk about the keto diet. Right? One listener?
Yes, one listener.
All right. One is some. Some is part of one.
I've had people on Instagram reach out to me about it. But
and what is that Instagram place they can reach out, Chris?
It's Chris Conkers, C-R-I-S, Conkers.
Check her out there, folks. And chrisconkers.com, because she is also always writing things about, things being blogs, about...
just one blog.
Makeup reviews and...
Book reviews. And some keto stuff.
And there's always keto stuff there, too. Check her out there. And, of course, you're listening to The Witch Trials. You can subscribe to The Witch Trials on TuneIn, iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play podcast section, wherever you get your podcasts, you can listen to us there. And you can follow us while you're following Chris Conkers on Instagram at Sabrina's Witch Trials, on Twitter at Sabrina Podcast, and on Facebook, facebook.com/Sabrina's Witch Trials. I want to get this in early before they stop listening.
Yeah.
Because listen, I do it when I listen to podcasts, like, oh, here come the plugs, off it goes. You can't do it now, unless, of course, you have that 30-second skip, and then, I mean, you've already done that, so you're not even listening to this.
Yeah.
28, 29. So subscribe to us, everywhere I said. Chris, as I said, we are here to talk about Witch Trash.
Witch Trash.
Witch Trash are we going to talk about? This episode of Sabrina Teenage Witch, which is a big pile of it. As you know, because you're an old pro at this, I ask all my guests to describe the episode of Sabrina Teenage Witch we watched in a set number of words.
Every time without fail, I forget about this part.
What are you going to do? You're going to write them?
No.
You don't have Phil level commitment
to
this.
No, I don't. I don't.
So I'm going to ask you to describe this episode in 6 words. New woe, both in Sabrina Teenage Witch episodes and in numbers that I ask my guests to describe the episode in.
The Spellman's hillbilly cousins come visit.
That is accurate.
It's not the most grammatically pleasing sentence, but
in a way, that's perfect for this episode, which features a lot of grammatical errors on the part of the Hill Williams that we will talk about. Actually, I in writing my notes, I don't like to use the same word over and over again, although I find that I use things, a lot of phrasing the same, like saying like before this happens. You'll hear it a lot when I read the notes, but
I say definitely a lot.
I actually had to Google synonyms for hillbilly. I got yokel. I'm a big fan of yokel.
Hill folk.
Bumpkin was there. So get ready for
trailer trash. I mean, they are kind of
white
trailer
trash.
Trashy.
Yeah. So get ready for a myriad of insulting comments for those folks in the Mid-South.
In the Pokes.
those folks from the Pokes. Very good, Chris. Why do I even try anymore? Let's get started here. Chris, episode 33, Witch Trash, first aired November 14th, 1997. I thought I'd give you a bit of fun information about November 14th, 1997, Chris. The number one movie in America at the time? Any guesses?
When was this? November
14th, 1997? You will not know this movie existed. That's right, Chris. It was The Jackal, starring Bruce Willis.
All your moves back to front. You think he's the one who's up against us? It's the other way around.
Bruce Willis, Richard Gere, Sidney Poitier.
No!
The Jackal.
You say The Jackal, I just think of West Wing. And The Jackal.
Kathy. Where's Sam?
In his office, fighting with your daughter.
Tell him to come to the press room. He's not going to want to miss The Jackal.
He was back at 5:15. Twist of lime, coke on the side. The brother loved the highlight. Had a PhD in street strife. They called him The Jackal.
See, when I said it, I think of that Family Guy bit where Stewie's like, where they're playing, not Pictionary. I think they are playing Pictionary. And it's like, Jackal? Jackal? Is it a jackal?
Oh, yeah, yes. No. That was the first thing.
The number one song in America, actually, was Candle in the Wind, 1997. The Princess Diana version. It would be number one until the end of 1997.
Makes sense.
12 straight weeks, and it, I believe, is still the number one best-selling single of all time. Let's get started here, though. In the living room, Chris, Sabrina is seen rubbing Hilda's feet while asking Zelda if she wants more cocoa, leading Zelda to wonder what all the niceness is about. Sabrina eventually reveals that she wants a car, and when they say no, she shows them the C that she got in history as her ride to the Freedom Trail fell through. So she couldn't go see it. Zelda gives her a speech about going around the obstacles, which I believe she got from Chris, and shows her exactly how to do that by zapping in a freedom fighter who immediately realizes Sabrina has a report due and begins a clearly well-rehearsed lecture on the Freedom Trail as we go to the open.
If there are obstacles in your path, go around them.
That's right. If you can't get to the Freedom Trail, try Freedom Fighter.
Paper on the Freedom Trail? The Freedom Trail includes many historical sites of significance to Boston.
Wouldn't a car have been easier?
Chris.
Ow.
First things first, I thought there was a great line by Hilda in this where she says, that happened to me because I got a D because my dad wouldn't buy me a rocket.
Yes.
But it was very good delivery by Caroline Ray.
A C in history.
I got a C because I don't have a car.
That happened to me once. I got a D because my dad wouldn't get me a rocket.
What stuck out to you here, Chris?
In this open. What stuck out to me? It's like a very quintessential teenage argument where, oh, mom, but I need this computer. I can't do my report otherwise. Which is definitely an argument that I've made in like junior high when I wanted a computer.
When I got my laptop, I was just like, but Chris got hers, and then it worked. So, whatever.
I forget, but I, like, had to lobby hard for mine.
Yeah.
For my own laptop.
You got a lovely compact laptop.
Yeah. I liked it.
I remember when I got... The only thing I remember about getting my laptop really is, well, one, got it from Circuit City.
Yep.
You got your first one from The Wiz.
Yeah.
Which is a very New York City late 90s, well, 90s, early 2000s reference.
The Wiz.
Nobody beats The Wiz is slashing prices on our entire stock.
Nobody beats me because I'm The Wiz. Yes, I'm The Wiz. I'm The Wiz.
That is the guy.
Elaine's in love with The Wiz guy?
But the thing I remember is I got my laptop the day that John Ritter died. Which I believe, or no, I think I got it 2 days after John Ritter died, because I think he died September 11th, 2003, and I got mine September 13th, because I was, even like when I would have been 11, a huge Three's Company fan, and that was right, that was the year after Eight Simple Rules had started, and I love that show, so him dying actually like was really sad for me, and that's why I remember it. I only remember the sad things. But I got an HP, so as where Chris is a little dated.
I liked my compact. It just, like, after a while, the screen wouldn't hold itself up.
That HP actually had a bunch of problems. But anyway, continuing on with more early 2000s laptop talk. No. Actually, Zelda does use a compact often on these episodes. So
of course she does.
You were clearly the trendier one.
Yeah.
Okay.
It had a Q, okay? Compact.
Did you notice that the freedom fighter who pops out of the magic book with a much better, I thought much better CGI than that time that Sabrina's dad had to jump out of the magic book?
Mm-hmm.
It looked much better now. I thought that the freedom fighter looked an awful lot like a handsomer Steve Buscemi.
Buscemi.
If you look at the screen right now, I'll show it to you. Does he not?
I feel like some of it has to do with the expression on his face in this photo.
I think it's the eyes.
That he just has, like, it's an actual term.
Bug eyes.
No, it's like protruding eyes. It's just a type of eye shape where your eyes are slightly more protruded.
Yes.
As opposed to, like, if you have hooded eyes or, like, different, it's just an eye shape. I feel like he also kind of looks like Willem Dafoe.
Maybe a little in the jaw, but I feel like
there he looks a lot more like Steve Buscemi.
Yeah, it's the smile and the eye. Like I said, handsome Steve Buscemi. The one other
that photo is just creepy because he looks too much. It's just like it's very Steve Buscemi, like in terms of the expression and then like the way his mouth is open. And you guys can't see any of this, so it's...
Well, I mean, go back and watch the episode, folks.
Unless you're watching on YouTube. Then
maybe. Although I don't cut it. Unless this is one of the trial briefs, in which case my mind is blown as I'm editing together this trial brief. Hey Al, good work. You're a nice guy. Keep working hard. Good things come to those who suffer. Chris.
Wow.
Giving
the kids hope.
The other thing that stuck out to me with Sabrina's argument is just fucking borrow someone else's notes. That's what teens would do.
Or, you're a fucking witch.
That is the other obvious one.
Zap yourself there. Or if that magic is too advanced, get one of your aunts.
She's definitely done it before, though. Like in the season 2 opener.
It might be too far. You know what I mean?
I don't know.
It's not like zapping yourself to school. It's like zapping yourself to Boston.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe long distance zapping requires a more experienced hand.
Maybe.
So then, but you have two aunts.
Long distance zapping might be the title of this episode. Yeah, honestly, just figure out some magic. Well, she never uses magic for anything.
Yeah.
Sabrina's
you also have a vacuum.
Witch.
I mean, I get that it's daytime, you know, maybe not the most.
Yeah, but I don't understand if people
can see. Conspicuous form of travel.
I guess Libby did see her flying her vacuum at one point.
It was nighttime. I feel like it's only a nighttime. And I feel like they stopped doing that. Like, the vacuum is not really touched anymore.
They use it once after that. I think it comes back.
I don't know.
But this does start the story arc of Sabrina constantly wanting a car, which will lead to
an
episode later on.
I feel like that's more about relating to teenagers in general, because
Definitely.
That's a very like common issue with teenagers. Like, I need a car. I need a car. I want a car.
I thought, in terms of fashion for this opening, I really liked Zelda's black dress with like the red, black shirt rather with the red, sorry. I really liked Hilda's black shirt with the red flowers on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice print, I think, and it looks good on her.
I feel like that's something you could literally go and buy today.
Yeah, like, and I think that's a good thing. I, however, did not like Sabrina's blue and purple and like brown, wavy, chevron-y kind of shirt. Not the biggest fan.
I kind of like it. I'm fine with it.
I'm not here.
It's not something I'd want to wear, but.
All right. Chris, the doorbell rings as we return from the open.
Mm-hmm.
It's Harvey and Valerie here to pick up Sabrina for breakfast before they go to the aquarium. Sabrina says goodbye to the aunties, noting how she won't be driving as she doesn't have a fucking car. And as she goes to open the door, she's shocked to discover that it won't budge. And we soon hear all the doors and windows sealing from around the house.
What's going on?
I know it sounds crazy, but the door won't open. I wonder how that happened.
Oh, dear. Hilda, would you check the back door?
Right.
And I'll try these. Boy, that's a...
Nope.
Hilda? Any luck?
Even the cat door won't open.
Valerie starts to worry about the air supply, but don't worry that, you know, she's still all out of love and so lost without you. Listen, there was going to be an air supply reference.
The second you said air supply, I knew it.
And that's the one that's always on my mind. Sabrina and Zelda tell her, you know, not to worry, and they join Hilda in the dining room to figure out what the hell is going on. Zelda assumes that it must be a late payment on their mortgage because this is a tactic other realm lenders use, and she entrusted fucking Hilda to do it, and she's the worst. They head out for the mortgage company while telling Sabrina to distract Harvey and Valerie without using a mind freeze, but reiterate that even if she does a good job, she's not getting a fucking car. Sabrina explains to her mortal friends that their security system went haywire, and Harvey's attempt to open the door by force just gives us a very gif-able moment of him pulling the knob. Sabrina then says that they can just stay for breakfast and they'll all get a knife, and that she'll cook. We then get concurring scenes of the aunties at the mortgage company with, and that's cross-cut with Sabrina making breakfast and them eating it. So I want to talk about just the Sabrina breakfast scenes first. Basically, Sabrina tries and fails at making breakfast. She tries to zap an omelet, but they walk in on her doing it, so she has to do it by hand. She's a terrible cook. She cracks an egg really poorly. She cracks it and then gets her hand in the way of it going into the bowl. And eventually she serves them, after setting the eggs on fire, she serves them something that looks less like scrambled eggs and more like Hamburger Helper, I thought. But they're not liking it either way. Chris.
Yeah.
Let's go back to Harvey pulling the knob. How much did that look like a dick joke?
Because
there's a slide whistle there. And to me, that combination, it's instant dick joke.
I didn't think that it looked like a dick joke. But at the same time, I was like, he's pulling the knob, which is.
And when the knob breaks off.
Yeah. And the knob goes off in his hand.
The knob goes off.
The knob goes off in his hand.
It sure does. He pulled it too hard.
Yeah.
Let me try this thing. Is this part of the standard alarm package or is it extra?
We're not going to Big John's.
It's clearly a dick joke. Well done, Nick Bakay,
who wrote this episode. I just thought of it as very, like, cartoon. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, that's why a whistle will do that.
Yeah. And, you know, the stretching of the knob.
Yes. I mean, listen, we've all been there. What annoyed me a little bit was, like, I can buy that other witches would be able to magically seal their house and that the Spellmans wouldn't be able to undo it magically.
Mm-hmm.
But just break a fucking window if you really want to get out of the house so bad.
I could see you not being able to do that.
Like, it's like magical glass?
Yeah. Like just like the doorknob. If the doorknob can do that, then what's to say that the glass can't, like, reverberate and just, like, go... That's my best comic book or
yes.
Cartoon.
I'm not going to say
sound
if you
effect,
go.
Okay.
Yes, and by the way, if you're a professional ADR artist, you can use that.
No, I do not give permission.
Please feel free. I own all recordings of the Witch Trial, so have at it.
No.
What's that idea here, Chris?
Wait, I have no idea what you just said.
What?
Could you enunciate, sir?
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. Red Robin really rocks. Red Robin really rocks. Chris, what did you think of these scenes? And let's focus first on the initial scene with them all realizing that the house is locked.
I didn't think anything specific about it.
Nothing stuck out to you? Did you not enjoy just like
I thought it...
Hilda and Zelda just sitting by the piano having a fun afternoon before Sabrina left?
It seemed a little odd. I loved it.
I don't know if you noticed this, but the stool Hilda is sitting on is like Salem's usual stool where he sits at the table.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that's fun. It's like they're just using that stool again. That's cool.
Yeah, it didn't.
Feels like a real
that.
House instead of just a set.
I thought it was
do.
Weird that one door locked and then you heard all the other doors locked. It's like we're really gonna fuck with them.
It's like a horror movie, yeah.
Like once they notice the first one, that's when we'll hit them with the others.
They're planning this assault on the
also,
house.
Does it not seem odd that they can go to the other realm, but they can't leave the house into the mortal realm? Because...
Yes. Yes, it does.
Isn't the whole point to lock them in the house? Yeah. Like, if you can escape by going to the mortal realm, who gives a fuck? Like...
Yeah, I mean...
Just go to the mortal realm.
Or go to the other realm and then come back.
I kept saying mortal.
Yes, you did.
Go to the other realm.
Go to the other realm and then just come back to some other point in the mortal realm.
When you have an obstacle in your path, go around it.
Yes.
Come on, guys. You just said it.
Bit of your own medicine there, Zelda.
Seriously.
Again, when Sabrina does conjure, tries to conjure breakfast, magic in this show has never taken so long. Like, the plates aren't wobbling.
How does she stop it by holding down the plates? How is that in any way magical?
It would be great if, like, almost just
appeared on top of her hands. That's what I'm waiting for. Obviously, no, it's not going to happen. But I'm like, if this were logical, that's what would happen. Also, okay, so this is my thought process, right?
Sure.
And apparently Sabrina doesn't have, like, the foresight to... think of other ways to do things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have my car. Gonna get a fucking C because I'm not gonna go where I need to go. My friends are here, so I can't just fucking zap at the oven and say my aunts were making a quiche before we got here, or muffins, or some other baked breakfast food.
Or fuck, just like open a box of Ritz crackers and give it to them.
You have a fucking bread box, don't you? Oh, we have fresh bagels that we picked up this morning. Like,
I mean, even like there has to be some food in the house that they eat. Like, actually just give them food.
I think the thing is, she said she was going to cook and didn't, but, and can't.
Right.
But, like, hey, you find a workaround.
Toaster strudel is technically cooking.
I think the thing is, obviously, for comic effect,
they
want Sabrina to fuck it up.
And I did like the practical effect of the plates wobbling. I thought that was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. But again, like, you've done way more in way less time with magic. Like, come on.
I feel like that's something that's always frustrating me with the show.
Mm-hmm.
But I get it because it's a show and the whole point is to have these highs and lows and, like, have...
This episode is a bit of a low.
Hijinks. But at the same time, it's like, you're... a witch, you have magical powers, you should be able to come up with a way to get this shit done.
I did like the idea when Sabrina...
And who conjures orange juice first?
I don't know. That's weird.
And only two glasses. Was she not going to have orange juice?
Yeah, she...
It was two glasses, right?
I don't... actually, I'm not sure, but if I don't doubt you, although she might have just brushed her teeth, so you don't want to, like, you don't want to drink orange juice right after that. It's just an awful taste. I did like the idea of there being, like, secret Spellman family recipes, which she mentions. I want that cookbook.
For trash.
And two, we do know that they do have a seven witch chili recipe that they really adore. So that would be in there. Give me that cookbook. I'll buy it.
You would buy it too.
Yeah, no shit.
Mystery breakfast. It's two glasses.
There you go.
Mystery breakfast hamburger helper.
That's what it looks like. There looked like noodles in there, and I did not see a lot of eggs in there. Like, I saw a lot of eggs.
She burnt them, so.
That's true.
Maybe she didn't have any left.
It's already lunchtime.
Can't zap them in. Can't just zap at the fridge and be like, oh, we already had another, like, 3 dozen eggs in the fridge.
I also thought it was weird that they keep their eggs in a bowl in the fridge. I mean, again, that's because it's more visually interesting.
Maybe they're farm fresh.
They're definitely not.
Maybe they zap in farm fresh eggs, okay?
Sure.
Maybe they're on keto and they're very conscious about grass fed.
Listen, you and your Nick Bakay apologizing are not going to get through this episode. Nick and Robin Bakay wrote this episode, I was telling Chris before. The only episode that the husband and wife duo wrote together. In the mortgage agency, Chris, the loan officer welcomes the aunts, explaining that he can't give them a card as that's a frill. And of course, here at Budget Mortgage, they forego the frills to save them money. When he hears about their situation, he explains that it's probably just a late payment as their house hasn't begun filling with sand yet. He then starts looking up their account in a Filofax and does so hilariously.
Let's have a look-see. Spellman, okay. PQR. Coming up.
Coming up. He later uses an old-timey adding machine. Again, he's foregoing the frills. But says that it's better than that old slide rule he used to use, which that was a fun reference too. He discovers that they're all paid up, and he even tries to get the main auditor on the boiler, as he calls it. Picks up an old-timey telephone, telling Ethel that it's no hurry as they've got all century. Eventually, after Hilda threatens to hurt Ethel if he doesn't hang up, Ed, as we find his name, he explains that the mortgage has been fully paid, so Hilda threatens to move their mortgage, but is stopped when Zelda explains that it's a 1% mortgage at 200 years. That's a very good mortgage.
Yeah.
The two of them then head out, but they're stopped by a rain of pork rinds, leading Ed to assume that their problem is of the family variety.
Why is it raining pork rinds?
Your house is sealed and somebody is dumping salty snacks. You don't have a mortgage problem. That's family.
We don't have any relatives that we have problems with.
Boyd and Racine.
Our hillbilly cousins.
They say that they don't have any problem family members before stopping in their tracks when Zelda remembers Boyd and Racine, their hillbilly cousins. Get ready, folks. Back at the house, the mortals are wondering where the aunties are. And thunder from the linen closet confuses them, so Sabrina zaps in a pool table and a parlor to distract them. When the aunties return, they explain to Sabrina that the house was sealed by Racine and Boyd, who are angry about Great Granny leaving the aunties the magic book in her will. With Hilda noting that they tend to lash out when they have a bad bingo night. Zelda goes on to explain about how in the other realm, the kind of magic that it would take to seal a house is unimpressive, and without the magic book, they have a lot of trouble somehow, but we'll talk about that. Sabrina immediately empathizes with them, realizing that their plight is similar to her lack of a fucking car. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. The aunties explain the feud will probably be over in a couple of years, so they'll just eat lunch in today, but Sabrina works a little magic, and we hear the linen closet doorbell ring as she's invited the hillbillies to lunch. We then get a lot of hillbilly humor really quickly as Racine, Boyd, and Boyd's mother, Mama, her given name, are first impressed by all the towels in the linen closet, there being enough for one for each person. And then the trio tells us that they were sitting in their recliners in their yard when they get zapped into the mortal realm, which Mama tells us is what, Chris? Rude?
Yes.
Yes.
Zelda, rude.
Thank you. Zelda introduces Sabrina, explains why she invited them, but they're just more interested in the lunch, and they weed the hillbillies downstairs, but Hilda stops Mama to collect one of the towels she almost purloined. Chris, a lot of stuff there. Let's go back to the mortgage agency. Tom Poston plays Ed, the mortgage man, and I thought he does a fantastic job of it.
He does.
He's like that perfect mix of incredibly nice, but unintentionally super irritating just because of the situation.
Mm-hmm. And super slow.
Yeah. And I thought the gimmick of budget mortgage where everything is super arcane because she's saving slightly more money is a fun little joke.
Yeah.
17, 17, 5, 5. How do you like this baby? Huh? A lot better than a slide rule, I'll tell you. All righty. Well, your payments are up to date.
Then why is our house sealed?
I don't know. I could run these numbers again.
No!
What did you think of... Well, I mean, we did mention it earlier, you being of the keto variety. I mean,
raining pork rinds
must have just been your dream.
I wrote keto dream in my notes.
Honestly, you just go around insulting families, just family members, and then like walking around with your mouth open.
Holding out a bucket.
You really are a...
Saving these for later.
You're a real piece of shit, Al. That's her opening her mouth.
And you just don't get upset. And I'm like, come on, Al. Make it rain.
Oh, wait. You're mortal. I've just been insulting you for no reason. All right, Chris. Let's talk about... let's just start with the reveal of the Hillbilly Cousins. One, I thought it was a fun little, like... I thought the actual reveal of them in the mortgage agency was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, super over the top and just like, our Hillbilly Cousins! I thought that was great. But the story... itself, I think, feels really like cliched and feels very uninspired, I guess. I think the idea alone, just the idea alone that this feud is over the magic book is really dumb because they live in the other realm. There must be a lot of magic books. Like, this cannot be the one book of magic.
So, I think it's, like, a familial thing where the book gets passed down. And, like, you do see that in a lot of, like, witch shows and
stuff.
But I think, like, in terms of the way that the other realm is set up, there has to be, like a Jamie Oliver type witch where it's like, oh, this witch puts out a magic book, like...
Yeah.
You know, every like 5 years or every couple of years, there's a new magic book out and everyone clamors to get their hands on that magic book because it's like, I feel like there's a sense of commercialism in terms of the other realm where that could easily be a thing where like not every witch gets the magic book. If you have siblings, if you have like, you know, other family members.
But the book is, I believe the exact title is An Education of Magic or An Education in Magic.
Yeah.
So if you view this as, like, a textbook, like, we wouldn't fight over a textbook.
It might not be. It might be that, like, one of their ancestors just wrote it that way in terms of, like, educate the family.
That's
but
fine.
I think they just did it. They just made it into this.
Sure.
Like, to be convenient for the story.
And I could understand the family heirloom aspect of it.
Yeah.
But, like... It's later stressed that Boyd and Racine's life is the way it is because they don't have this magic book.
Yeah.
Like, get another one.
But I think that's also...
Just print another... photocopy it and give it to them.
I think it's also just a commentary on people. I feel like for a lot of the episode, that's what it is. It's just a commentary on people. And they're
having something to blame.
This episode, more than anything else, I feel like has a specific moral to the story. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just what it is.
We'll talk about the moral at the end, because yeah. We'll talk about if it's even the right moral to be telling in this episode. But
yeah, I think it's just about circumstance. And you can always find something to blame mm-hmm. your circumstance on.
Exactly.
For them, it's just, don't have the magic book, so Boyd can't have a job. And, you know, we're living not where we want to be, and we don't have this or we don't have that.
Mm-hmm. The other central aspect of this episode is all the hillbilly humor.
Yeah.
As a style of humor, we can talk about with the Jeff Foxworthies of the world or the Larry the Cable Guys. I mean, I personally, it's not my brand of humor, but like I can appreciate one or two cleverly written jokes.
Yeah.
I think this episode, it's just way too much, way too, like, all at the same time. And eventually, it starts to be, like, so densely packed that it becomes, like, distasteful and, yeah. I thought, uncomfortable at times.
It starts kind of as, like, caricatures, but then it's just, like, it harps so much on it where it's kind of, like, it almost feels like a commentary, and then it also just feels like kind of ignorance. Insulting. Yeah. Like,
there are aspects of these hillbillies that are awful, but there are times where I'm like, God, you're really painting them as like the, like, not even the yeah. worst people, just like the, like, just unfortunate souls.
Well, because the thing is, yes, they're characters, but you have to think that someone wrote these characters, yes. and is what is the person who wrote these characters trying to say?
And
what is it that they see when they see this kind of person? Because that's what becomes apparent. You're looking at it like, shit, like, this is what someone thinks
of
these people.
And I get that they are they're the antagonists of the episode, but it's like, yeah, but...
It's too convenient.
They're not supposed to be, like, awful and disgusting and dislikable and not... normal in a good way,
yeah,
in every way, you know, give them some good things or some just like normal traits. Don't make them unappealing and like, I don't want to say bad, but like,
it's just kind of funny to me because like me and Al, we used to be on a TV podcast we would talk about this all the time where in terms of TV villains, Al hated it when TV villains had redeemable traits, mm-hmm. where it was like, oh, you could kind of see that they're not the worst people. Like that was something he would always harp on. Like he hated it.
I think that's done way too often.
Yeah,
and I really appreciate a villain who is just hateable.
Yeah.
And has very few redeeming qualities, and those redeeming qualities aren't pushed. Like, especially after like you defeat the guy, it's like classic. Description is Spider-Man 3, if anyone has ever seen that movie, the Sandman in that movie, he commits a bunch of crimes, and then Spider-Man defeats him and is like, oh, I was doing it all for my daughter or whatever. It's like, for the love of God.
Yeah, but don't you love, oh my God, what's his name from Batman?
Mr. Freeze?
Yeah.
I think the Batman the Animated Series telling of Mr. Freeze is a very good story, mm-hmm. but the thing is, Mr. Freeze exists in a world where the Joker is also there, who has no admirable qualities. He's not doing anything yeah. because of some grander plan. You know, those two are juxtaposed against each other. I don't think we see enough just really bad villains doing bad things. And I think that's always fun to see. This also, you have to remember, is not a drama. It's a 22-minute sitcom, so it doesn't really work the same.
I think it just felt like a lot. Like, sure. And then it just kept piling and piling and piling.
Just
like
in the scene,
every sentence that came out of their mouth was something else. And it's just like, shit.
Just in the scene we talked about, just them entering, like, you have the recliner joke. You have all them being impressed by all the towels. Boyd only getting dressed, or rather, Boyd and Racine only getting dressed for lunch. And then Mama stealing a towel.
I wrote down in my notes that that's very relatable. That's probably the most relatable sentence in the whole fucking show, in the episode. Where is it? I had the quote. I got dressed. They better be feeding us.
Yes. How millennial of Racine. The hillbillies come downstairs gawking at how big the house is, and when Salem sasses them about Graceland, Mama threatens to turn him into jerky. Sabrina offers to get them all some iced tea, but Racine asks for hers with a side of magic book. And this starts a slight argument about talking like a normal person and the use of the word "caint."
Okay, well, how about we start this visit off right? I'll get everyone some iced tea and you guys can unseal the house.
How about I take my iced tea with a little sugar and a magic book?
Oh, well, that's certainly in the spirit of compromise.
Can't you ever talk like a normal person?
This from a woman who says "caint"?
Initially in my notes, I wrote it as "taint," which I had a whole different discussion about, just ready to go. They lead the hillbillies into the dining room, and they marvel at the lack of TV trays. Val and Harvey then return from their pool game, and Valerie makes a weird comment about just begging Harvey to call her Slim.
Yeah.
He's like, honey, what the hell? You're like, you're not...
She thinks she's a pool shark.
I think that felt like a weird joke about, like, her wanting to be validated as skinny.
I don't care how many times you beat me. I'm not calling you Westbridge Slim.
Okay, how about just Slim?
Oh, I don't think so at all. I think it's just like she wants him to call her like by a pool shark name.
But then she says, just call me Slim.
Well, yeah, because what was it before? It was like...
Westbridge Slim.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, because that's like, I don't know what the specific reference is. Like, I'm sure it's a specific like film reference or something.
I think it's from The Hustler.
And so she just wanted to be... I don't think it's that she wants to be known as skinny.
Anyway, so they come back in. They ask if the alarm is fixed yet. And Zelda and Sabrina give them some great explanations when Valerie wants to call the fire brigade to chop down the door.
We should call the fire department. They have axes.
No. What Sabrina means is no.
They sound like they're being kidnapped.
I like it. Wait, can we talk about something?
Sure.
So they're stuck in the house for quite a while. They make it seem like it's a really long time because Valerie says she's getting bed sores from sitting playing cards.
It's all in the course of a day, though.
Yeah. But and obviously, like, they started early morning because they were going to go to breakfast, and it had to be before 8:30 because they wanted to get the plates.
Mm-hmm.
But then by the time this rolls around, it's about lunchtime because they're going to have lunch with Racine and Boyd and Mama.
Thank you. Thank you for putting the W in there.
Of course. I'm a classy lady.
Sure. I've always said it.
But they've been playing cards. They had breakfast, but they've been playing cards this whole time. You're fucking teenagers. Mm-hmm. You're locked in a house, but
you're
not.
Drugs.
You're not.
Yeah, I agree.
You're not locked in a fucking closet. Like, you have a TV. You could watch a movie.
Yeah, but like midday TV. Like,
you can watch a movie.
I guess you could watch Jerry Springer.
There are VHSs up in that bitch.
Also,
you know there are.
To be perfectly clear, she still has magical power. She can zap it whenever the fuck she
wants. Yeah, she could go into the other room and be like, oh, look, I just found Monopoly. Or
yeah, that's right. That's Chris's magical power dream.
Monopoly.
A game of Monopoly.
I'm sorry. Monopoly takes forever.
And you hate it.
Okay? I hate it. I do. I don't like playing Monopoly. But they might.
I'm going to use my magic powers.
Or.
Oh, look. Word search.
Oh, look. She zaps at that stupid cabinet that holds the stereo. Mm-hmm. It's full of game boards.
Yeah.
Who wants to play Mystery Date?
Or like
okay?
My foosball table. Your references are doing just great. It's
thank you.
Mall Madness. I've got Mall Madness.
Or Pretty Pretty Princess. Could you not see Harvey with all those necklaces around his neck? That would be fun.
13 Dead End Drive.
Nick Piquet, get on this, okay? But yeah, there are so many things you could do. You're teenagers in a house, not like I said, you're not locked in the closet. Like,
fair point.
Why are you doing something so fucking boring?
To be perfectly honest, like, think about, like, and the listener should do this.
I mean, I'm that's why I didn't say, like, you don't have the internet. Or
no, not even that, but like.
Or you might, but you.
Nah, 97.
There's not really much to do on there.
Think about what you do when you're just, and I mean, you're just everyone, what you do when you're sitting at home. It's not like you're like doing anything. Mostly you're just like sitting around watching TV. Playing cards, whatever.
But that's why I said why wouldn't they watch a movie or something?
That's fair.
I guess the thought is, oh, it'll only take a second, and then they'll be back. But once you see that it's not, Come on, do something.
Watch some This Old House. Come on, that's a great show. Probably on PBS. Arthur was on by this point. Put it on Channel 13. It's the middle of the day. There's nothing but Arthur and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Puzzle Place and God, what else?
It was too early for Cyber Chase. Yes,
Big Comfy Couch was definitely there. All your big properties.
It was too early for Dragon Tales?
Yes.
Damn, yes, all the good stuff.
All the good stuff. Okay, so Zelda invites him to stay for lunch and heads out to tell the guests that they'll be there. Sabrina explains that the guests are her cousins from Hong Kong who flew in last night before the house was locked. Great cover. Boyd and Racine then discover the Spellman laptop in the dining room and think it's a still because they're dumb yokels. When Zelda tells them that it's sensitive equipment, they just wink at each other and order two jugs and like kind of nudge each other. That's the best hillbilly joke in the whole episode.
Well, Racine nudges Hilda.
Yeah.
What is this?
I don't know. Something expensive, I reckon.
Look at that. They're on steel.
Don't touch that. I'm sorry. It's just very sensitive equipment.
Yeah, sure, sure. Put us down for two jugs.
Zelda tells them mortals will be at lunch, but Racine tells them not to tell Mama as she don't break bread with no mortals. They ask if they realize that Sabrina is half mortal, which Racine again reiterates, don't fucking tell Mama. They promise not to as long as the hillbillies don't use any magic during lunch. Zelda then invites Harvey and Valerie to enter the dining room, but stops Sabrina to give her some Astonish Mints, folks. Getting more of these great magical
gimmick products.
Yes, that is a good phrase for it, and I love these products. Basically, magic Mentos that will make Harvey and Valerie impressed by anything if Sabrina needs it. Spoiler alert, she will. Chris.
It'll make things fresh. The fresh maker, if you will.
Very. It doesn't make
sense. Sorry. Yeah, I'm lame.
Nothing tastes better than.
Yeah, it makes everything seem fresh and new.
If you,
oh, the number nine.
The thing I enjoyed was if you look at the package of Astonishments, they clearly went to a lot of trouble to make it look like Mentos, but the label clearly says Astonishments on it in like the Mentos kind of like curved writing. Yeah. A lot of work went into this thing that will never be seen. And I like that because I like these effects. I saw it, but not everyone was pausing and then looking at screen grabs.
Yeah, but if it just said fucking Mentos on it, like...
No, it could have just been a simple rapper.
Come on, this is a show. Put some effort into it, okay?
Yeah, like these great jokes about stills and such. That was a good joke. Chris, we have talked in the past about the subtle racism undertones of some of Sabrina's interactions with witches. When she went on a date with Dante, there was all that about her being half mortal. This episode just knocks that up to 11.
Oh my god.
And throws out any subtlety. Like, one of the main things that we know about the Bumpkins, especially Mama, is her disgust for mortals. And that will come up more later on.
I want you to know that Sabrina's mortal friends will be joining us.
Oh, Lord, don't tell Mama.
Mama, don't break bread with no mortals.
Well, Sabrina's half mortal.
Oh, Lord, don't tell Mama.
There is something that just feels very, very wrong about playing that for comedy.
Yeah.
Especially the way Mama is written later, that feels really wrong to me.
Yeah.
And like, I understand that the lack of understanding between the yokels and the Spellmans will be connected to the rest of the story going on. I don't feel like that part is ever resolved or really acknowledged as wrong. Like, no one really reiterates that disliking them because they're mortals is a wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
That, I feel, is one of the failings of this episode.
Yeah, they don't even touch on it.
No. It's just like, okay, we'll dance around it. And then when Sabrina is literally insulted by Mama because she's half mortal, we just cut away with a goofy face on Sabrina.
Yeah, there's no, like, how dare you?
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of my house.
The one thing that would be the logical thing to argue about in this family,
yeah.
They don't.
No. I feel like So I feel like part of it is because it does feel more like, you know, it's like a witch mortal thing, but it feels very much like a social commentary about like
race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, not that I believe that, but like hill folk and a tendency towards racism, or right. like isolationism and like a tendency towards racism. And then
I also think that the way Mama is depicted,
yeah,
has like weird anti-Semitic overtones.
Yeah.
Like there's something about the way she said later on, she says like, I can't be buried in the family crypt, where it's like, that kind of
the way she says, because she mixed with them,
yeah,
it felt very much like race.
Oh, definitely.
Like, and it felt a lot like it just felt a lot like a commentary on like white trash, yeah, and their views on like
not good
other races.
And the thing is, if you're gonna do this, like, you have to have the end scene of either them being told, illustrated that they're wrong,
yeah,
or them having that come to Jesus moment, for lack of a better phrase, where they realize that people that are different than them aren't bad.
Yeah, I feel like in terms of this, it was just a vehicle for showing like their small-mindedness, mm-hmm, and their like, I don't know how set they are in their ways. But so it's really, I think that the point was kind of to use it as a way to demonstrate like their views, like in terms of like how small-minded their views are and, mm-hmm, how like limited their scope is or whatever.
Sure.
And that's, it's sort of shown as a way to show their character.
And
not in terms of anything else.
Sure.
But I feel like because you keep piling on top of it, it kind of just feels very wrong.
And I mean, I obviously, in terms of,
you're building the character on it. Listen, that's really what they do.
I'm pretty sure what really happened was like, Nick Bakay wanted to put some controversy in this, and it's like, well, we know Sabrina's half mortal. That has come up before.
Yeah.
Hill folk can sometimes be racist.
Yeah.
So we'll make them racist against mortals. I don't think there was a lot of thought put into it,
yeah,
but that's the issue, where it's like, you can't just bring this up and then not resolve it or really like in any way address it.
Right.
More so than just being like, well, Mama doesn't like mortals. It's like, okay, you want to tell her that she's wrong, anyone, when she insults someone? No? All right, cool.
I mean, and obviously, like, obviously, you know, we're not saying that, you know, witch trash, white trash, hill people are, no, have these views, or, you know, are, no, prejudiced.
They're playing on that caricature.
Yeah, they're playing on that like stereotype or that cliche. But yeah, it's I don't know. It just became a lot.
The more you think about it, the worse it is.
I mean, I understand using it because, And I think in terms of the other episode with Dante, it, mm-hmm, works. It works as an idea. Do, yes, you know what I mean? And it's an idea you see in a lot of witch things, like Harry Potter, the whole mudblood. Sure. And
the issue with Dante, or the way it's used in the Dante episode, like, it comes up like maybe 15 minutes in when he finds out that she's half mortal.
Yeah.
And then it's resolved pretty quickly because they call him a creep and, yeah, he gets his comeuppance.
Yeah.
Here, it's like half of the episode. It's one of the driving factors of the episode. It's one, yeah, of the central stories of the episode. And it's never resolved.
I think it kind of plays on that idea that everyone has that family member who is like prejudiced and racist, mm-hmm, and fucking small-minded as shit. And you can argue with them till you're fucking like blue in the face.
And also you dance around it, but you don't really want to. There's a weird like issue in confronting them,
yeah,
just because there's that familial tie, and some people don't want to threaten that familial bond or whatever. Yeah. It's true. Like, we'll talk about how the episode wraps up and how I think it should have wrapped up, because I really don't like the ending of this episode either.
Yeah.
Let's talk about actually the actors who were playing Racine, Boyd, and Mama. You probably recognize most, if not all of them.
Yeah. Mama, not so much.
You definitely know the actress who plays Mama, but they hide her really well.
She's been on Sabrina before, right?
I don't think she has, but she's been on everything. Racine is played by Lonnie Anderson. most famously from WKRP in Cincinnati.
Jennifer.
Hi, Johnny.
Come on in. What a surprise. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I had my date drive me over. He's down in the car.
Oh, well, why don't you invite him on up?
Oh, no. Give him a chance to cool off a little.
She's had a lot of roles on a lot of things. She tends to play, like, an attractive blonde, like somewhat of a seductress.
Yeah.
Boyd is played by Gary Grubbs. One, a great hillbilly name. Two, he pretty much has played, like, a southerner in everything ever.
Yeah, I've seen him before.
He's been in a lot of... he was in JFK. He was in LBJ. He's been in a lot of, like, political movies also. Mm-hmm. But I recognize him most as... his name is Harlan Polk. He played the southern client that Will has on, like, the first season of Will and
Grace.
Yes,
I remember. Yeah.
Grace and I don't do Halloween. You know, it's a kid's holiday.
Oh, you're missing out. Halloween is the best holiday of the year. You'll see what I'm talking about when you get married and have your own children. Or when you have your commitment ceremony and adopt your Himalayan whistle kid. Or whatever it is in vogue with you fellas now.
Mama is played by Edie McClurg, who has pretty much played the busybody neighbor in everything. On Seventh Heaven, she was Mrs. Beaker.
Oh, yes. I can see her face. Yeah.
They do a really smart thing where they cover her very noticeable red hair in like a bandana, but like a head wrap.
Yeah.
So they hide her really well. I thought it was really clever. You, listener, might recognize her best as Grace, the principal's assistant in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
What is so dangerous about a character like Ferris Bueller is he gives good kids bad ideas.
Uh-huh.
Last thing I need at this point in my career is 1,500 Ferris Bueller disciples running around these halls. He jeopardizes my ability to effectively govern this student body.
Well, makes you look like an ass is what he does, Ed.
Thank you, Grace. I think you're wrong.
Oh, well, he's very popular, Ed. The sportos, the motorheads, geeks, sluts, bloods, wastoids, dweebies, dickheads. They all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
She's in that too, and she's great in that too. So a really good set of actors that
her voice is very different in this
episode. It is. She's doing like a deeper and with the accent.
She has a much lighter, like
cheerier, brighter, which works for that busybody neighbor. She's great. And she's been doing comedy since like the early 70s. But a really good cast, just maybe not used as well as they could have been. Okay. At lunch, Zelda comments on Boyd's soda straw hat, which Racine knows would be fine if he had a name brand soda, but he's got bargain soda, and Mama adds that sends the message that is a man with no magic book.
Grown man with cheap soda on his head. What message does that send? I tell you what message. This man's got no magic book.
Magic book?
TV Guide. Hong Kongians.
Sabrina explains to the mortals that Magic Book is Hong Kongian for TV Guide. Great cover. Racine then asks if anyone minds if she zaps in something fried, which Hilda covers as being code for microwaving. Literally the opposite of frying. When Valerie asks how Hong Kong is, Racine asks Sabrina what her little mortal friend is talking about. A bit of subtle racism there too. Leading Mama to scream in disgust and move when she finds that Valerie, the girl she was sitting next to, is a mortal. Sabrina quickly slips the mortals some mints, and Zelda impresses them by telling them facts about the number 9. They eventually head off to play in Sabrina's room with her TI-83. Mama then just cries about having mixed with mortals, as now she can't be buried in the family crypt.
To think I mixed with mortals. Now I can't be buried in the family crypt.
Sabrina tries to bring peace by saying the hillbillies feud with the aunts because they don't understand each other's side, and that she sees both sides because she's half mortal. And this just leads Mama to note that she knew she was half mortal because her eyes are too far apart. She's got a physical difference because of her
race,
body makeup, heritage,
mortality.
Sure, also a good word, I guess.
Upstairs, she's mortal. So she
upstairs. Harvey and Val are astonished by a mirror and go from unimpressed to basically sounding like they're high as fuck.
So since everything's reversed, when I look into a mirror, I'm not seeing what you see when you look at me.
Exactly. You look nothing like that.
It's astonishing.
Downstairs, the Hill Williams enjoy their dessert of pudding and crackers. Boyd explains how he wants to work, but he tain't got no magic book, so he can't. Tell me about it, Boyd. Magic book is code for a job that'll hire you. The aunties then go to fetch more pudding and crackers, and Sabrina begins to compare the plight of the hillbillies and their lack of a magic book to her lack of a car due to no money. But she ends up insulting the hillbillies when she notes that the magic book has helped her a lot. They're shocked by this because, you know, now the mutt's got the magic book. Can you believe that? This is after Boyd is insulted by Sabrina because he thinks that she's saying that he, someone who is an adult, should be able to get a job. I, you know what? I'm really starting to feel for this Boyd character.
Well, I'm glad to see someone understands our troubles.
I do. I know how tough it is to make it on your own. I mean, my aunts told me I have to earn the car, but it's hard to get a job when you're only 17.
Are you implying that someone Boyd's age shouldn't have trouble finding work?
No, I just meant it's hard for me because I'm still in school.
Oh, so now you're throwing your education up in our face.
I bet you think we're nothing but witch trash.
That's not what I meant. Look, I'm the one who sympathizes with you.
Oh, really?
Absolutely, when I think of how much the magic book has helped me since I got it.
The mutt has the magic book.
Oh, Ma, the mortals are taking over the world.
The aunts return with more pudding and crackers, but Racine tells them that this whole meeting is pointless and tells the hillbilly crew that it's time to leave as they're missing the wheel. Sabrina offers them more pudding, but Boyd says that they have pudding or pie filling, who knows, at home, and they refuse to unseal the house before leaving. Hilda wants to fight back with rotten produce, but Zelda says no. That is, until she sees what the bumpkins did to her laptop and declares that this means war, or more accurately, a montage, which we will talk about in a few minutes. Chris, Boyd's hat. Basically the international symbol for white trash.
Yeah. With crazy straws.
Crazy straws.
And soda.
I will admit that I, at one point, did want one of these hats, especially in the 90s. They were very popular and they seemed like a whole lot of fun. The more important thing, however, in Boyd's hat is the soda that he is drinking. Because, you see, Racine mentioned that it's not name brand soda.
It's bargain soda.
Did you see what the soda was?
I did not.
It was. And I enjoyed this an awful lot when I checked just to, because I wanted to see what they had put there. Well, color me surprised when I were to discover it's Popsy, Chris.
Okay. Is
there great cans of Popsy from all the way back in episode 3 when Sabrina zaps in other realm treats for Harvey while she's babysitting. She zaps in cans of Popsy and hey over here instead of Yoo-hoo.
They got to reuse their props, Al.
I fucking loved it. Listen, whatever I rate this episode, that rating was increased by one whole score because of the fact that they brought back cans of Popsy. I love it. Same can and everything. This is what I live for.
Probably literally the same can.
Oh, absolutely. This is what I live for. Because you have to figure, they can't use actual soda, so they have to have, and they already have soda cans of Popsy lying around.
Yeah.
I love it.
You're a little too excited by
this. If they served them butter thumbs for dessert, I would have hit the ceiling. I would have loved it. Speaking of their dessert, Chris.
That pudding did not look
good. It was like vanilla pudding, which does not look good.
But it looked very, like, thin.
Here's what bugged me. Zelda throws shade at the hillbillies for eating pudding and crackers. She fucking served it. It's her house.
I mean, maybe they were just trying to serve them food that they would like. Because if they, because the thing is, they already called them highfalutin. If you start, you know, serving them creme brulee, they're going to fucking throw a hillbilly fit, okay?
Listen, that's fine. Where did the crackers, did they ask for the crackers?
Maybe.
Yeah, but like.
Maybe you didn't hear them ask.
That's a mistake of the writing, though. Because this just seems like Zelda being a bit of a bitch. It's like, oh, you like this pudding and crackers? Yes, I like the thing you gave me. I'm politely eating it. What did you think here, Chris?
I thought the pudding was gross.
Okay. Yeah.
It's just more and more and more racism.
We do have to talk about the racism here. It's just blatant. I mean, Mama saying that she doesn't want to mix with mortals, and now that she has, she can't be buried in the family crypt.
And then also Racine, like, saying, what's your mortal friend talking, talking? Like, not just the whole, like, mortal thing, but also the fact that she talks to Sabrina rather than asking her, oh, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. Like, she won't address the mortal.
So tell us what it's like living in Hong Kong. What is your little mortal friend talking about?
And just calling her a little mortal friend feels like... It's not the same thing because one has a historical reference and one is just written on a TV show. Yeah. But like, it feels like when white people would call black men boy.
Yeah,
like it feels like that.
Yeah,
a little.
It does.
Yeah, really. At this point, Mama can just tell like a story about how her dad used to have mortals work their farm or something.
Oh
like,
my god!
It's blatant. When Racine says that she wouldn't unseal the house for all the bacon grease in China.
Yeah, I was confused.
That's fine. If you watch it, they then cut to a wide shot. Edie McClurg, who plays Mama, is just like laughing her ass off. Like, she has lost it. Like, she's like chuckling. She's like, okay, we gotta go. We gotta go. Up the like, I don't know how many takes of this they did. She is losing her fucking mind. She's laughing. I kind of just love it. But yes, the racism thing, not good. Anything else to add here, Chris? We haven't really talked about fashions here. For most of this episode, Hilda is wearing that like green tiley dress. It is back. She wore it in a prior episode, but now, this time she's wearing it with like
a green
top
shirt under it.
That's the Lorraine special here on Wish Trials. She really she knows which ones to pick to cosplay as because these show up a couple of times. I also did like that. Hilda is wearing the dress with like nude shoes. I think last time she wore it with yellow heels. I think
that's too much.
Yeah, I think the nude shoes keep focus on the dress.
Yeah.
Also, the whole episode, Sabrina is wearing this like blue top.
Yes, it's like velvet.
Yeah, I didn't like it because I thought it was like gathered weirdly
in
at like
middle.
The boob.
It was gathered in the middle.
And there was a bow on it, but I thought the way it was gathered kind of like
I thought it was fine. She
chest.
Has small boobs.
Yeah, I know, but like also she's wearing like black velvet pants that make her ass real big.
I did not pick up on that.
That was
she
mistake.
Usually pick up on her
that
butt. So, yeah. What about the hill folk?
I mean, they're all wearing like classic bumpkin attire. Like Mama's got a muumuu, which is just fun to say.
It's a dressing gown.
Sure. Racine's got like she's got a little denim dress and like a denim vest and like a ruffly shirt.
Yeah.
And then boys just got. Overalls because you know what a bumpkin
t-shirt.
What a bumpkin
Mama.
Mama is fun.
She's so irreverent like in terms of everything.
Yes, she's a horrible racist. Yep. Though we then get the montage of the families just fucking with each other, including the hillbillies zapping in an outhouse into the Spellman bathroom, and the Spellmans fucking with them by giving them a lovely bathroom in their outhouse, which literally sends Boyd running away because bumpkins are afraid of indoor plumbing.
Obviously.
The one thing that we do get that I really enjoyed in this montage was all the Spellmans are like sitting in the kitchen, just like hanging out or whatever, and then they get zapped and they all get transformed into like beer gutted folks with like white t-shirts with beer on them. The thing I love with Salem also turns into a beer gutted little cat with
He's
a shirt
so
on
cute.
It's adorable.
Do you know what bothers me about all of this?
What's that?
So all of this is happening while Harvey and Valerie are still in the house, and like you have to think that some of these scenes are Sabrina decides she's going to go take a shower.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And Boyd decides he's going to shower. Yeah. And it's like, what? How long has this been going on? Like, is this the next day? Is this 3 days later? Yeah. These people are still in the house.
You know how you take a shower after lunch? We all do it.
And then she puts on the same clothes.
Yeah, I know.
So I guess she didn't get to take her shower because they fucked up the bathroom.
I mean,
but
Boyd and Racine and Mama being in the same clothes makes sense because they're dirty hillbillies.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the Sabrina
I meant Sabrina because she, like, when she comes back downstairs, she's wearing the same outfit mm-hmm. from before. But you have to think also, okay, so they made the bathroom into an outhouse, right?
Yes.
Since they're not able to unlock the doors, does that mean they're not able to turn their bathroom back into a normal bathroom? Does that mean that Harvey and Valerie have to use the outhouse indoors when they're...
Well, I mean, you got to figure a big fancy house like that, they've got multiple bathrooms.
So Sabrina took a shower somewhere else and maybe put her old clothes back on.
Definitely. Dirty Sabrina. Hashtag dirty Sabrina. That's already been used, definitely. Also, you got to figure if they were to use the outhouse, like Valerie and Harvey would just be super impressed by like, oh, this is nice wood.
Also...
Oh, a hole the shit in. That's convenient.
Wouldn't amazement have been convenient when they were waiting for the aunts to come back in the beginning?
Yes.
But I understand, mean, like, they thought it wouldn't take that long.
And not only that, but Sabrina didn't know about them, theoretically.
Well, no, they would have had to give them to her. I guess they thought, well, they're going to have breakfast, so by the time that's done, we'll
And they
be
thought
good.
It was just an issue with the mortgage. At this point, you're trying to cover up racism, so you need all the mints you can get. Mentos. The non-racist mint. That's right.
Except it's all white.
Sabrina eventually stops all the fighting before Zelda releases a tornado in a jar after the bumpkins mess with gravity to basically just lift her off the ground. What an awful trick.
Hey!
Oh no! Those hayseeds are messing with gravity!
And yet they can't get a job?
Sabrina is stopped from handing over the magic book by the auntie's great granny, who appears floating next to her before asking if they can get down, as she had a really big lunch. The aunts introduce Sabrina, who looks confused, explaining to Granny that she thought she was dead, you know, because of the will. Zelda then just laughs that off and explains that witches live so long, but they have several wills to clear out all the junk. After hearing the Spellman side of the story, Granny summons the yokels to hear their side, which Boyd paints as the Spellmans hugging the magic book and flaunting their riches, which starts a shouting match. Granny tells them to stop and for Boyd to take off that delicious-looking Popsy hat. Nothing like a fresh Popsy. She tells them, the yokels that is, that the will was fair because the aunties got the magic book and the yokels got what they wanted, which was basically all of her fucking money. Does that really constitute junk?
Like, no, it doesn't.
Oh, I've got all this money just lying around the hat. My attic is full of it. It's awful.
Oh, Racine, I know you're unhappy, but it was fair. Now, Hilda and Zelda got the magic book and you got what you chose. All my money.
They get all great-grandma's money?
Yep. And they bought a mansion and a jet and several butlers.
Don't forget tiaras for Mama.
And then all the money was gone.
We didn't just spend it. We invested some of it.
Yeah. Who knew chihuahua racing wouldn't take off?
Everyone?
Granny gives the yokels the same lecture about, you know, going around your obstacles, which they picked up from Chris. And, when the yokels start complaining again, Granny threatens to send the next interrupter into the corner. She does this magically when Zelda interrupts her to tell everyone to let Granny speak. God, Zelda, stop cutting off women. Like I do on this podcast.
I cut you off.
Stop it! I had nothing to say. I just didn't make sounds for the joke. That'll work. Anyway, she tells them to help each other, Granny does, and then tells Racine to unseal the house, eventually sending them away with a little ringy bell ring, and Hilda heads out to count the towels. Chris. The only thing I really liked about this montage, as I said, was the beer-gutted Salem, which is really, really cute. We also do get like a bumpkin Salem, because in the beginning, the bumpkins turn them all into like hillbillies.
Yes.
Hillbillies outfit. hillbilly outfits. He's got a little hat, and he's got a little, like, thing straw. Of straw coming out of his mouth. Very cute. I did also enjoy the Sabrina joke, where she's like, oh, they're fucking with gravity. They can't get jobs? I mean, they're fucked with gravity. It's a much better joke when Sabrina tells, because, you know, I'm no Melissa Joan Hart. What did you like here, Chris?
I like the double plot twist. Mm-hmm. You don't expect Granny to be alive.
Okay.
Which is great.
Living she shows is
up,
pretty good.
She shows up and she's floating and you're like, is you a ghost? And she's not.
Yeah, that's right. Sabrina with a bit of bumpkin talk herself.
Yep.
Here's what I didn't like about the way this episode wraps up. Granny is an ex machina. She comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
She resolves the issue. The house is unsealed. The bumpkins are sent away. It doesn't resolve the bigger issue of all the racism which is brought up.
Definitely not.
And there is a better way to write this ending. What should have happened is, after Boyd and Racine enter the house, they can't leave it. They should have been stuck there.
No. That wouldn't have worked.
I know it wouldn't have worked because the aunties left to go to the mortgage thing.
It wouldn't have worked because they would have just made themselves comfortable and been assholes.
No, I disagree. The way you write it is, being forced to be around mortals and Sabrina especially, they are assholes for a while, and then eventually they find that they're not so different.
Are you writing an episode of Seventh Heaven? Because that's not how Sabrina works.
But that's the way this has to be written, because the way you've written it already is there's a horrible group of racists.
Are you Greg Berlanti-ing again? Because that's not how this would work.
For the listeners that don't know, Greg Berlanti, who executive produces like all of the CW superhero shows and also Riverdale, I have an innate ability to predict how he's going to... to be fair, he doesn't write the episodes, but I have an innate ability to predict how any Berlanti-produced episode will go. I nail it every time, especially the superhero ones. But the point is, this is how the episode has to go, because this is how it was set up. The racists have to be shown that what they believe is wrong. And really, this goes to a larger issue with the moral of the episode.
Yeah.
Because the moral of the episode that they actually do get across is really a lesson about, like, accepting what you have and dealing, using what you have to get things accomplished.
Yeah, don't use your circumstances as an excuse.
Right. And while that kind of does work, I mean, it, like, the granny thing just reiterates that moral, but doesn't actually, like, the yokels don't learn that lesson. I mean, they're told that lesson, and then they're just sent away, right? The lesson that needs to be learned is a lesson about, like, understanding the other side, you know?
But that's not what this episode's about.
But that's the problem.
Yeah. Well, but that's the whole thing. They use the racism as just, like, a... It's not as a teaching tool. Yeah. It's as a, this is who they are, and that's who they're going to be.
And my way.
And there's no, which is so stupid, because if you think about it, the whole fucking moral of the story is to not use your circumstances as an excuse. So don't use the circumstance of them being small-minded as an excuse not to try and, like,
show them that racism is bad.
It's just, I feel like that maybe it's just too deep for this.
And my way is better, because at the end of my episode, you get the visual of Zelda coming out of the dining room wearing Boyd's hat and going like, oh, this hat's pretty great after all.
It would be Hilda. Hilda would do that. Zelda wouldn't do
it's
that.
It's funnier if Zelda does it.
But she wouldn't.
I think she would, because she makes
Zelda would actually use the laptop. The laptop. Yeah, I thought I said it wrong. The laptop to make some kind of alcoholic beverage.
Yeah, it's fun too. So much better an episode could have been made from this story.
I still liked the double surprise of, like, well, she's alive. Mm-hmm. So the whole episode, you think she's dead and it was in the will. So I liked that. And then I also liked that the whole time you're thinking, well, she gave them the magic book, probably because she liked them better, whatever. And, like, you don't feel bad for the hillbillies because, like, they're assholes. But at the same time, you're kind of like, wow, that kind of sucks that they didn't get the magic book and, like, they didn't get anything because, you know.
Right. And
turns out they got all the fucking money.
You're assuming they got nothing.
Yeah. Because
all they're talking about is the magic book.
Exactly. So you don't think about what they got, which what they got is actually a shit ton, and they just misused it, which I think hammers home the moral that they chose, which was that, you know, you can't use your circumstances as an excuse. Like, mm-hmm. You can make an excuse for anything. That's basically what it's saying. Like, they had all the money in the world, and they still couldn't make it work because of the type of people that they are, that they use everything as an excuse. It's like, oh, well, we have the money, but we don't have that one thing that would make everything better. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's important because there are a shit ton of people out there who do that. Like, you can have everything in the world and still complain that you don't have that one thing that you want. Like, people don't know how to be content with what they have or to make what they want happen, mm-hmm. because they get so stuck on one specific thing.
The only other thing I had noted here was, with an eye towards the back of the linen closet, Chris, Great Granny is basically wearing a giant yellow tassel on her head.
I said... Mm-hmm. It was a French tea cozy.
That also works. Yes. The funny thing is, I liked her, like, her coat.
It was like a brocade, like, I wanted to say like a dressing gown as well, because mm-hmm. it is kind of like just like a robe.
Yeah, but I think it's because she's short. The woman playing her is Alice Ghostly, who famously played Esmeralda on Bewitched.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't remember if she was on Bewitched or I Dream of Jeannie.
She was on Bewitched. I know that. Yeah. Much. And she was also in something else. I can't remember. Something. She had a big role in something else, but I can't remember. But
it's
and
gold gloves. So yeah. It's just like antique gold. So it's not like a bright like gold, but her like she's wearing like a brocade like robe essentially with it's like purple antique gold and gray.
Mm-hmm.
It's got like a big gray bow at the top, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's got gold gloves on and then like a bright like yellow tea cozy with like fringe on her head.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
It is really bad.
Yeah, that's definitely my pick for worst outfit.
Yeah, I think even just
with
the hat.
Mama.
I think even just the hat alone should be thrown
and
in.
And then she's got pearls. Like pearl bracelets on over the gloves, which is, you know, a classy touch. I feel like it's just so much.
Yeah. And she's, like I said, she's very short, so it's like it just all encompasses her.
Yeah. I mean, I think it goes to her, like it's an ugly outfit, but it's a character enhancing outfit. Mm-hmm. Like, she gives zero fucks. She's old as shit. She is fabulous and she knows it. And
Chris has
she's a boss ass.
Chris has a very high opinion of Great Granny.
No, first of all, she's like, I'm going to be fucking dripping in jewels.
Sure.
And still wear this garbage. I'm going to essentially be wearing a robe.
Well, you know what happened is, Chris, she gave away all her money. So she had to go to like the back of a fabric store.
And she does that classic little old lady thing where they carry their purse with them everywhere.
Yes. I also like the way her hands are just like one over the other in this shot. Okay. Chris, we cut later. Where Sabrina sends the mortals home, apologizing about the aquarium, only to have them not care because they got to see her rug. That's written poorly.
They got to see her...
rug. The rug in her room. Her room rug.
Right.
Yeah, it was poorly written. And they leave, astonished by the clouds. Sabrina asks her now not dead great-granny, or great-great-granny, technically, to visit more, and Granny invites her to visit her in Florida, provided she doesn't burn. Zelda asks to get down from the corner, but Granny says not until she thinks about what she said, before hoping that Granny herself will remember what the hell she said initially anyway. As the credits roll, Sabrina says that she's going to go around her obstacle and take the bus to the aquarium, as she doesn't have a car, but she does tell Hilda not to expect her to be happy when she gets home because she hates the bus. What a little elitist. C- God damn it.
Everyone hates the bus, yeah. But you fucking do it.
What a unique opinion.
You think people like the bus?
After some burrow talk with Hilda, Zelda tells her to take a sweater while still in the corner as we see Zelda call Granny's name to see if she can get down yet, but Granny just yells no as the episode closes.
Any instructions, Aunt Zelda?
Take a sweater.
Okay, gotta go.
Grandma! No!
Chris, anything stick out to you here at the end?
I really hope that Great Granny isn't wearing this outfit in Florida because she'd fucking burn. Mm. Well, not burn, like, she would just be super hot because that shit looks heavy.
A witch burning is nothing new, am I right? I mean, because they set him on fire a lot. Sorry, folks. Chris, I apologize. That is the end of the episode. However, of course, we now have some closing ceremonies here on the witch trials.
And I just thought of something else. Sorry.
Go ahead.
When Harvey and Valerie leave, how is it still day?
I mean, maybe it's like it's like 7 o'clock and you can still see clouds. Yeah. The sun is setting.
I'm also shocked that the amazements haven't worn off because I feel like that's a constant gag with them where the thing that's supposed to be keeping people distracted wears off and it's like, oh shit.
Maybe she was just like pumping them full of them. Like every hour she'd go in and give them another one.
Maybe.
Yeah. I wonder if the
that's also kind of scary. She's keeping them captive and drugged.
I wonder if the amazements also do freshen your breath. So like after you just like wake up and you're like, oh, wow.
But is it like maybe it's like a super freshness? Like that shit will you'll have fresh breath for like the next like 2 years.
Fresh to death, but in a bad way.
Like it literally kills them.
Yes,
that seems like a castle.
Clearly one of us watched way more Castle than the other one.
Or like a CSI Miami like catchphrase. Well, I'm sure he'll stay fresh to death. And the song starts.
Great job. I'm going to not put the song in and I'm going to just leave that.
They know what I'm talking about.
Perfect.
Prince said she came down to drink mojitos and catch some sun.
Well, it looks like something caught her.
Closing ceremonies here on the witch trials, Chris. First and foremost, our very important scale for ranking episodes of Sabrina Teenage Witch, the TGIF scale, still the best thing I've ever written. This good I feel scale, Chris, that's what, of course, what it stands for. 1 to 5 scale, each number has a corresponding TGIF show. 1 to 5, let's just go through it. 1 out of 5, of course, is a You Wish. 2 out of 5 is a Teen Angel. 3 out of 5, a Hanging with Mr. Cooper. 4 out of 5, Why That's a Family Matters. And 5 out of 5, a perfect score on a TGIF scale, is a Boy Meets World. Chris, where does Witch Trash fall for you on that TGIF scale?
I feel like it's a Teen Angel and a half.
So a high Teen Angel, you would say.
Yeah, so like a 2.5, okay. I would say.
For me, it's, I would say, a low Teen Angel, honestly.
I feel like the idea was interesting. Like, they have a branch of the family that they don't know, like, that Sabrina doesn't know anything about, and they're troublemakers, and there's this discrepancy, or, like, there's a issue within the family because of will-related stuff that someone got and someone didn't get. And then I also think, like, I think it's contrived, but I think the idea of, like, having, like, hillbilly cousins is, like, funny. But I feel like all of that racism and all of, the, like, the harping on it and, like, the trying to play it up to reinforce a stereotype about hill people,
yes.
I think is not cool. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like a lot of it was funny.
That's the thing, yeah.
Maybe in the 90s it felt funny because I don't want to say people were less woke, but
not only that,
I feel like it was much more common.
Like Ernest Goes to Camp was a thing, and
yeah, you know, like there was a lot of that in TV and movies, mm-hmm. and I feel like at the time it was kind of like, oh, we're just going off of that like TV character stereotype,
yeah,
as opposed to like an actual person, actual people stereotype. The thing that I find interesting is this idea of family that Sabrina knows nothing about, mm-hmm. that then dictates like this whole episode. I feel like they just took that to the fucking extreme.
That's all of season three.
Yeah. They're like, oh, that was a kind of interesting thing. Let's basically make it that, well, season three is the family secret.
Yes.
But then on top of that, like, after they find out the family secret, then mm-hmm. it's just they keep harping on it even more.
You get the occasional family member and stuff and person that Sabrina doesn't know.
And aren't some of the evil twins like hillbillies?
Zelda's? Jezebelda is, she feels more like just Southern.
Okay.
She's not like a trailer trash
person. Isn't she supposed to be like white trash though?
Not really. She's like, to my memory, she's more just like, like a sexy Southern seductress who's like a bit of a bad girl. It sounds like one of those movies.
Sounds like you like this a little too much.
It sounds like one of those movies Beth Broderick was in before she started Sabrina. Her career. No, I mean, she does have a Southern accent.
Yeah.
But I don't think her character is specifically like hillbilly-ish.
I feel like a lot of that was drawn from this episode where they're like, oh, that was a good idea. That was an idea that worked. So let's make a whole, let's make more of a surprise family issues.
It is a good way. The idea is a good way to get a story into an episode to like, and I mean, season three being the family secret has its own overarching story, but each episode, you know, the character influences the story that goes on. That seems like a very obvious thing to say, but I said it anyway. My thing with this episode, however, is just, as you said, not a lot of funny jokes. The hillbilly humor doesn't work for me. The racism thing really bugged me the more I thought about it, especially considering that it's not resolved in any way. I don't love the ending. I actually don't even like the ending. I think the moral, while there, isn't really hammered home in any good way. And I think there's a more important moral that should have been hammered home, especially considering the way it was written. I think this is probably the worst Nick Bakay episode that we've seen so far. I think he wrote at least one episode you've been on, because you did Third Aunt from the Sun.
Yeah.
He also did the Troll Bride one, and he also did As Westbridge Turns, which you like an awful lot.
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite.
He will do some more.
Basically, he wrote two of my favorite episodes.
He does some really great episodes. The next one he does is the band episode. That's a good episode. I don't care what you say.
I mean, I feel like it's a very, like, of the time.
And that episode also has a special like magic home product where Sabrina buys like talent soda, basically, and they all drink talent soda.
I thought you were going to mention that episode is the reason we have the Sabrina the Teenage Witch album, which I had and loved.
You sure did. We listened to it like a week ago.
Yeah.
Does not hold up as well.
It's on Spotify in case anyone's interested.
Check it out there. More importantly, Chris, the Back of the Wooden Closet Award, our episodic award for each installment's biggest fashion flop. I think we're agreed on Granny here.
Yeah. It's Great-Granny?
Great-Granny. Sabrina's Great-Great-Granny. Not a great-great outfit, however. And nope. Back to the Wooden Closet she goes.
Bye-bye.
That's right. Where she probably lives now because she has no money. Chris.
She lives in Florida.
Some sort of Florida.
She's probably in like a retirement community in Florida. Well, maybe she lives with mortals. Maybe she doesn't have that, you know, racism.
Maybe. But then again, she's old, so you know how those people are.
Yeah.
The oldies.
Mama.
Chris, thank you so much for being here. Always a pleasure to have you on the show and talk with you about Sabrina Teenage Witch. We told people.
Is it though?
Yeah, sure.
Is it?
We told people where...
I just want everyone to hear you say it,
always
yes.
a pleasure and convenient to have you on the podcast. We told people where they can check out Chris Conkers. Also, you can follow Chris on Twitter at Chris Conkers as mm-hmm. well. Next episode, episode 34, season 2, episode 10, will be To Tell a Mortal, where it's Friday the 13th, and Sabrina gets to tell her friends that she's a witch. So get strapped in for that one, because there's some fun stuff, and then also not much of a plot. So get ready, folks.
not any plot.
But until then, I will say thank you so much for listening. Always a pleasure to see those listener numbers going up, and always great to get outreach from the listeners on all of the social media, so hit us up there.
Yeah.
Until next time, I'll just say we will see you in the other realm.
Sorry, folks. Graceland is closed today.
You know, cat make real nice jerky.